Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the January 6, 2026 Board of Supervisors meeting. I have a few announcements to make, and that is that hearing devices are available right here on this side of the dais. See them hanging there by our nice sheriff's deputy. And then the board chambers are T-coil compatible if you do have a hearing device. And then speaker slips are available at the back and on the side. The yellow speaker slips are necessary if you plan on speaking to any of the items on the board agenda today. I'll ask you to please stand up and have a flag salute. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. So what we have this starting off with is our first item on the consent agenda is reorganization of the election of the chair and the vice chair. So we will start with a opening public comment on this item. And I do not have any public comment on this item at this point in time. So I'm going to close public comment. And then we're going to just pull this item one and with board members with comments, deliberations, and a motion. And I will make the motion to approve consent agenda item one, which is
as recommended.
As recommended.
Second.
Thank you. Okay.
Chairperson Ortiz-Lay.
Yes.
Supervisor Gibson.
Yes.
Supervisor Pashong.
Yes.
Supervisor Paulding.
Yes.
Supervisor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Okay. That's right. I'm out and Jimmy's in.
We get to switch spots. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Good morning, folks. Happy New Year. First, what we get to do is recognize Supervisor Dawn Ortiz-Lay for her great job chairing our board last year. And so I want to present to you this honorary plaque. And I thought we would take give her a round of applause. And I thought we would take a picture as a board as well. So okay. Let's go ahead and do that.
Very good.
And thank you for doing such a great job. Really appreciate it. I'll just make a quick note regarding taking over the chair role. I do value this very much, and it's an honor and a privilege to serve in this capacity. I want to start by acknowledging something that many people are feeling right now. With so much happening in the world and here at home, it's natural to feel anxious or uncertain. When times feel unsettled, local government matters more than ever. It's where help shows up first, where problems get solved close to home, and where people can still make a real difference. I'm grateful for the honor and the privilege of serving as the chair of the Slo County Board of Supervisors. My focus is simple: clear direction, steady leadership, and making sure county government works best for the people we serve. We are facing real challenges. We dealt with some flooding just recently. I am very thankful to our first responders, our public works team, and county staff for the great work they did just over the weekend and last week. And also grateful to Congressman Carbajal, who personally reached out and congratulated me on taking the chair role and offered his support during the storms. This year, in my mind, is about moving forward together with hard work, accountability, and focus. Thank you, and let's keep moving forward together. Okay. All right, with that, we will move on to the remaining items on the consent agenda. And I'm going to open up those items for public comment. So this is for public comment on any items that are on the consent agenda. Are there any public comment slips? No? And then I should make a note, just reminding folks to fill out the yellow speaker slips in the back if you do have any public comments. Seeing no one coming forward, I will go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda and bring it back to the Board of Supervisors. Would anybody like to pull an item on the consent agenda? Okay. Yes, Supervisor Ortiz-Legge.
I need to recuse myself on item 5.
Okay. We will take item 5 separately then. Are there any other items that members of the board wish to pull? Okay. Are there any comments by members of the board on any of the consent agenda items?
Well, I just want to note that I'm very happy that my daughter, Georgia Legge, is on item 5. She's going to be volunteering with the CBID, the Coastal Business Development District, and so I'm glad she's stepping up and helping her community.
Excellent. Okay, seeing no other comments, would a supervisor like to make a motion on the consent agenda? These are all items not including 1 or 5.
Move approval on items other than 1 and 5.
And I'll second.
Second.
I think I beat you to it.
You did.
We had a motion by Supervisor Moreno and a second by me. If we get a roll call vote.
And this is all items on the consent agenda?
That's correct.
Excluding 1 and 5.
Okay. And 2, which is a public hearing consent agenda item.
It's a separate vote on item 2.
Okay. It's a separate vote for item 2, so if you'd like to amend your motion.
Amend the motion to remove item 2.
Okay. Supervisor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson Paulding?
Yes.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Supervisor Pashong?
Yes.
Supervisor Ortiz-Legge?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Excellent, thank you. We will then move on to item 2, and we've already taken public comment, so if anybody has a comment on this item, I see that Supervisor Moreno has her light on.
I was just going to move approval item 2.
Okay. Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Supervisor Moreno and a second by Supervisor Ortiz-Legge. Can we get a roll call vote?
Supervisor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Supervisor Ortiz-Legge?
Yes.
Supervisor Pashong?
Yes.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
And Chairperson Paulding?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. With that, we will move on to item 5. We already took public comment, and I will move approval of item 5.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call vote?
Chairperson Paulding?
Yes.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Supervisor Pashong?
Yes.
Supervisor Ortiz-Legge?
Abstain.
And Supervisor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Okay. That concludes all items that are not presentation items on our consent agenda today. So we will go ahead and move forward and go to item 12. And I'll turn it over to the clerk to introduce that item.
Item number 12 is a presentation, which is a request to recognize and formally congratulate the 12 student artists selected as finalists in the Wings Over SloCal Youth Art Contest. Accept the 2026 Wings Over SloCal calendar for public distribution and encourage the Department of Airports to continue to host the contest annually and ensure broad participation.
Okay, and I think our airports team will be introducing this item. Ms. Penny.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you, Bart. Good morning to everyone, and happy 2026. Courtney Penny, Deputy Director, Department of Airports. Today, we bring to you some excitement for the youth in our community. The county's Department of Airports launched the first ever Wings Over SloCal Youth Art Contest in 2025, inviting students in the grades K through 12 to submit original hand-drawn and painted artwork illustrating how aviation connects life to our region. The Wings Over SloCal contest was envisioned as a way to foster civic engagement and creative expression amongst youth, connecting them to the region's aviation infrastructure and its role in our everyday life. The contest provided a creative outlet for children to learn about the aviation's role and potentially inspiring them for future interests in aviation, aerospace, and STEM careers here at home. The resulting calendar serves as a tangible, community-driven product by the Department of Airports that we can distribute to travelers, stakeholders, and the community alike, and showcasing the community identity, youth voice, and the county's commitment to outreach. So with that, I'd like to introduce Annie Sechrest, the department's sustainability manager, to introduce our contest winners.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. Annie Sechrest, Sustainability Manager, Department of Airports. So I'm going to walk us through each of the months. So to kick off 2026, January, features Leanne, an eighth grader whose piece captures the wonder of flight from a unique aircraft soaring over rolling hills. For February, first grader Camilla's joyful artwork shows a colorful plane filled with happy passengers cruising through a vibrant sky. March highlights sixth grader Mason's imaginative take on aviation, which features the myriad of aircraft that call SBP home. In April, eighth grader Brooklyn's design takes us to a place many of us have been, staring out the plane window, watching the gorgeous vineyards and ocean below, while enjoying a glass of grape juice. May features sixth grader Clara's work, whose art depicts the many fun outdoor activities that make the Central Coast such a great place to live and visit. June spotlights Amelia, a fourth grader whose dreamy artwork highlights the morrows peeking out above the cloud layer below. Your flight is not delayed. In July, we honor eighth grader Andy's creativity, where each rotation of the artwork features a unique California landmark. August belongs to Grace, a fifth grader who illustrates an airplane soaring over Hearst Castle and the vast coastline that attracts visitors from all around the world. September portrays fifth grader Sloan's colorful plane, highlighting one of the reasons people step through our airport, for the love of travel. For October, fourth grader Everly's artwork depicts a peaceful scene with an airplane soaring through a classic Central Coast sunset sky. November features Molly, a fifth grader whose artwork portrays airplanes flying over the mission in Morro Rock, with the verdant landscape and abundant wildlife moving below. And December closes the year with 11th grader Luana's striking design, creatively depicting her furry companions on the wing and island below while soaring through the mountains and clouds. We also want to recognize the other captivating and creative entries, all of which are featured on the honorable mention pages. Thank you to all who participated in the Department of Airport's first annual calendar contest, and congratulations to the monthly winners. Together, these 12 pieces show us how aviation isn't just about planes and runways, but about how young people imagine and see connection, place, and possibility in our remarkable community. Please stay tuned for the announcement for next year's submissions later this year. Thank you.
Excellent work, and apparently we have a few of the artists here, and we might want to hear from them. Maybe, okay.
We'd like to invite all of the artists up to take a photo, if they feel comfortable.
Or we could just take a photo with the board, if you're more comfortable with that.
Okay, yeah. Here's one.
Oh. Happy to hear from you, too. Yeah. Well, we are just so impressed with your art. So thank you for participating in the competition, and thank you, Airports and Visit SoCal, for doing the good work. Any comments on this item by members of the board? Supervisor Pichon.
I just want to point out that October 20, Everly, grade 4, I think this is Bruce Gibson. So nice job.
Supervisor Gibson.
I'll just say that the airport holds a lot of wonderful memories for me, and it's a place of great joy and imagination, and I think that's really nicely captured in the art that's put forward here. So great job, everybody.
Supervisor Ortiz Lake.
Yeah, thank you for everybody who participated. You know, I absolutely love this calendar. It's going to be a big rival to the PG&E calendar with the scenes.
That was our hope.
This is very special. And I also just want to thank the airport for inspiring youth in the importance of aviation. And you're doing it on education, you're doing it on art, and at all levels. So thank you, airport team.
Supervisor Moreno.
Yeah, as we were taking the picture, the chair said to me, that was more talent than I had at that age. And I said, that's more talent than I have at this age. So yeah, just a beautiful job, and what a great partnership.
Do you have some further comments, Courtney?
I just wanted to share that we have calendars available for the entire community out in the foyer, so please grab them on your way out.
Excellent.
Thank you again.
Okay, very good. I certainly will be putting one up. Thank you. Okay, with that, we will go ahead and move on to the next item on the consent agenda, presentation items, and that is item 13, and I'll ask the clerk to introduce that item.
A resolution proclaiming January 2026 as National Mentoring Month and recognizing Big Brothers, Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County.
And I believe we have Carol Florence and Kylie Anderson here. There you are. Please come forward.
Okay.
We'll have our, see who's reading this resolution today.
Okay. Me.
Supervisor Ortiz Lake.
Yep. Okay. A resolution proclaiming January 2026 as National Mentoring Month and recognizing Big Brothers, Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County. Whereas Big Brothers, Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County's mission is to create and support one-to-one mentoring relationships to ignite the power and promise of you. And whereas Big Brothers, Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County has provided over 30 years of life-changing mentoring programs that promote education, healthy relationships, positive self-esteem, and lifelong growth. And whereas Big Brothers, Big Sisters mentoring programs are an evidence-based prevention program with statistically significant effectiveness at reducing drug use and violence and improving youth mental health and academic performance. And whereas 98% of the children in Big Brothers, Big Sisters program graduate from high school and 75% continue their post-high school education. And whereas the state of California has launched the California Men's Service Challenge, calling on 10,000 men to step up as mentors, coaches, and leaders to address rising disconnection among young men and boys to create pathways to purpose, leadership, and belonging. And whereas Big Brothers, Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County and other local organizations are proud partners in the statewide effort by offering opportunities for men and women alike to serve as mentors and making a lasting difference in the lives of youth. And whereas National Mentoring Month is an opportunity to celebrate mentors, recruit new volunteers, and encourage all residents to invest in the future of our community by supporting mentoring programs. And whereas the County of San Luis Obispo formally recognizes the month of January as National Mentoring Month and embraces the vision that all children should achieve their full potential. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby proclaim January 2026 as National Mentoring Month in the County of San Luis Obispo and urge all citizens to recognize the critical role mentors play in shaping the lives of young people and consider becoming a mentor or supporting mentoring programs in our community.
We'll do the photo and then we'll hand it back to you. Okay? Sounds good. Come on up.
Hi. Good morning. Here's your resolution.
Thank you. Sorry, Spook.
Right. I guess it's over.
Okay.
That calendar was a hard act to follow.
Indeed it was.
Thank you so much for the proclamation. Good morning, Chair Paulding, esteemed members of the board. Happy New Year to you all. Thank you for giving us the opportunity this morning on behalf of Big Brothers Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County. My name is Carol Florence, and I am a very longtime board member.
Good morning. I'm Kayla Anderson, and I'm a very new board member, but very proud.
So our mission really is quite simple, is to create and support one-to-one mentoring relationships that ignite the power and the promise of youth. So when I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know, but when a young person has a caring adult in their life and in their corner, someone who listens and encourages them and believes in them, their world changes. Research shows that mentored youth are more likely to graduate, avoid risky behaviors, pursue higher education, or a meaningful career. But I think beyond the statistics, the real impact is seen in the confidence they gain, the goals that they set, and really the dreams that they believe are possible.
Okay, so as a new board member, I've had the privilege of reading several stories of the impact that this organization has on our youth, and I just wanted to share one here with you guys today so you could really feel the impact of Big Brothers Big Sisters. So I want to talk about Gunner. At age 12, he was matched with his big about 8 months ago as a part of a family-wide effort led by his mom to find a positive male role model for her sons. The family had recently weathered a very painful divorce, and Gunner often plays the role of the peacemaker in the family. He's very stoic, but incredibly sweet. Since being paired with his big, Gunner has begun opening up, expressing more emotion, and feeling seen in new ways, showing increased confidence. He has rejoined in-person schooling and will be joining the soccer team soon, which we're all very excited about. And Gunner is just one of the many examples of the impact this organization has. They help over 300 youth per year, and so just wanted to share that with you. So this January, we're very proud to celebrate National Mentoring Month, a time to recognize the life-changing power of mentorship and to call on our community to step forward. Right now, there are over 40 children and counting in San Luis Obispo County waiting for Big Brothers and Big Sisters, with 74% of those being young boys. Each of them is hoping for someone who will say, "I believe in you." Just imagine the ripple effect. When we change one life, we strengthen families, schools, and neighborhoods. Mentorship doesn't just help kids, it builds healthier and more connected communities for all of us. Because when we invest in our youth, we invest in the future of San Luis Obispo. And that future looks brighter with every child knows that they matter.
So this morning, we want to acknowledge your support in the past and your continued support for Big Brothers Big Sisters. We would just ask that you spread the word, encourage your friends, your colleagues, and neighbors to volunteer as mentors. If you've ever wondered how to make a lasting difference, beyond, of course, being a supervisor, this is it. So just a few hours a month can change a child's life and in turn change our community's future. So from the bottom of my heart and Kayla's heart, we want to thank you for your time and for your commitment to making San Luis Obispo a place where all young people can thrive. Thank you so much.
And thank you for all the work that you and your volunteers do and your big brothers. I want to bring it back to the board for comments on this item. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It always strikes me that the commitment, the generosity of those who become bigs, the men and women who do that, is an exceptional expression of human kindness. And connection. And I just I thank all who do that wonderful work. We know it makes a difference, and it's a bright light in a world that seems dark sometimes. So thanks to Big Brothers and Sisters for carrying on.
Supervisor Ortiz-Lake.
Yes, I also want to express my gratitude. We know that this is, you know, investment in the future, investment in each individual child is just so critical. I really want to acknowledge the 10,000 men recruit program, highlighting the impact of boys in today's society and how important it is. And so really looking to work towards that and helping more on making sure boys know that they're included and feeling that they're part of society, because that's a really important national, statewide, and local issue. So thank you very much.
Supervisor Moreno.
Thank you. You know, so many of the challenges and problems that we have to address, particularly at this level of government, are once they get to such an extreme level, and usually when, you know, folks are older as well. And so to be able to address things early and really help help young people with the kind of mentoring and support that they need is so important. So Carol, Kyla, thank you and everybody that you're working with for what you're doing. It's so important.
Supervisor Pichon.
Carol, thanks to all the bigs and all the littles for the mentorship and all the things that you're doing. But the bigs have been, I know many of them in my community, and appreciate all they do for the future of this country.
I want to echo those comments to all our big brothers and sisters. And just also thank you for the level of engagement with our board and to local elected officials and community members. I know that I had the opportunity to go to Halcyon Farms and see your bigs and littles interact and the life-changing aspects of that. So thank you so much for all the hard work that you do. Okay, with that, let's go ahead and move forward to item 14. And this is a submittal of a resolution proclaiming the month of January 2026 as San Luis Obispo County Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And I believe Supervisor Moreno is going to read that for us today.
Thank you, Chair.
And we have the district attorney here. Please come forward and the team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, District Attorney.
Good morning.
So, resolution designating January 2026 as San Luis Obispo County Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Whereas human trafficking, including both labor and sex trafficking, is a widespread crime that violates the dignity, safety, and fundamental rights of individuals, affecting people of all ages, genders, and backgrounds. Whereas Human Trafficking Awareness Month recognizes the critical role all Californians play in preventing, reporting, and adjudicating these heinous crimes. Whereas victims of human trafficking suffer emotional, psychological, and physical horror at the hands of their captors who instill fear to keep them enslaved. Whereas the U.S. Department of State has estimated that between 14,500 to 17,500 victims are trafficked into the United States each year. California has been identified as one of the nation's top 10 states with the highest rates of human trafficking, with San Luis Obispo County being a county for trafficking industries, including farms, brothels, and online sex exploitation. Whereas the International Labor Organization estimates that approximately 27.6 million people worldwide are in forced labor, including forced commercial sex exploitation and sex trafficking, with women and girls representing about 43% of all forced labor victims and the vast majority of those subjected to sex trafficking. Whereas the county of San Luis Obispo remains committed to promoting public safety, strengthening community awareness, and supporting survivors, recognizing that human trafficking affects urban and rural communities alike. The covert nature of human trafficking means that many individuals are unaware that human trafficking exists in our county of San Luis Obispo. Whereas local organizations, including law enforcement agencies, victim service providers, healthcare professionals, educators, community groups, and the San Luis Obispo County Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force work collaboratively to identify victims, prevent exploitation, provide trauma-informed services, and bring traffickers to justice. And whereas the goals of the County of San Luis Obispo Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force are to prevent and combat human trafficking through education, protect and assist victims with full respect for their human rights through identification of resources and needs for the victims, and promote cooperation among law enforcement and community organizations by allocating resources to meet those objectives. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors designates January 2026 as San Luis Obispo County Human Trafficking Awareness Month and urges all citizens to observe this month by becoming aware of the human trafficking tragedy, by supporting those who are working towards its end, and by participating in community awareness efforts.
Thank you. It's always one of those, you know, moments where do you clap for it? Well, it's good that we are raising awareness, and that's what they're clapping. We're clapping for. So I'll hand it over to our district attorney.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Congratulations as you begin this new year in that role. To each of our board members, I want to thank you personally for taking such a strong stand in support of our efforts to combat human trafficking, whether it be sex trafficking, labor trafficking here in our community. Over the last 11 plus years, we've made remarkable headway in combating trafficking in our community. Just in October, we had a really remarkable jury trial that was the first of its kind anywhere in the state, in that we had three juries deliberating, hearing the case in one courtroom. That was a 48 total jurors in the court for this trial, where three different defendants who were accused of kidnapping a young 15-year-old young teenager from another state, bringing her against her will into our state and sexually exploiting her for commercial purposes across California. Fortunately, it was during an operation dedicated to taking down traffickers where our community law enforcement were able to detect it, find it, interdict, capture the three offenders, and bring this young woman onto a long pathway of healing. It took several years for that case to be brought to trial. That's why it went in the fall of 2025. But I'm happy to report that because of the additional services provided to this young woman, and because of the support, and because of our strength of our commitment to endure and stick with her even when she wasn't necessarily supportive, she has reported back to us how well she's doing now and how grateful she is to our community. Because if we had not intervened, our law enforcement had not intervened, and our prosecutors hadn't done their job, likely statistics would say that she probably would not be alive today. So I'm happy to report that she's doing well. And it's largely due to the fact that our community has taken a stand and now for 11 years been actively involved, and your board from the very beginning has supported that work. I want to turn it over to the Christopher G. Money Victim Witness Assistance Center Director, Jesse Yates, for some comments generally about human trafficking and our efforts.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and honorable members of the Board of Supervisors. I would like to begin by expressing my sincere gratitude to each of you for your continued leadership and steadfast support of the most vulnerable victims in our community. Your commitment to public safety, victim advocacy, and justice is evident through your ongoing support of proclamations, funding priorities, and collaborative efforts that allow vital services to continue countywide. On behalf of the District Attorney's Christopher G. Money Victim Witness Assistance Center, we truly appreciate the understanding, involvement, and thoughtful consideration you consistently extend to this work. Today, we are here to bring attention to a crime that is often hidden in plain sight, yet causes profound and lasting harm: human trafficking. Human trafficking is not only a serious criminal offense, it is a grave violation of human rights that strips individuals of their freedom, their dignity, and their autonomy. It impacts people of all ages, genders, backgrounds, and nationalities, and it exists in communities both rural and urban. Globally, as it was stated earlier, it is estimated that 27.6 million individuals are victims of human trafficking at any given time. These individuals are exploited through force, fraud, or coercion for labor, services, or commercial sex. While the scale of this crime can feel overwhelming, it is important to remember that these numbers represent real people, individuals who have experienced trauma, fear, and unimaginable loss, yet who also possess remarkable resilience and strength. Human trafficking does not discriminate, but traffickers deliberately target vulnerability, whether it is economic hardship, housing instability, immigration status, substance abuse, prior abuse, or lack of support systems. Victims are often isolated, silenced, and controlled, making identification and intervention especially challenging for law enforcement. This is why awareness, education, and collaboration are critical components of effective response. Here in our county, we are fortunate enough to have a strong, coordinated response for human trafficking. We are blessed with dedicated law enforcement officers, prosecutors, victim advocates, social services providers, healthcare professionals, and community-based organizations who work collaboratively every single day to combat this crime. Their efforts not only hold focus not only on holding traffickers accountable through investigation and prosecution, but also, and just as importantly, on providing comprehensive trauma-informed services to victim survivors. At the Victim Witness Assistance Center, our role is to ensure that victims are not re-traumatized by the system meant to protect them. We walk alongside survivors as they navigate the criminal justice process, connect them to critical resources, and help restore a sense of safety, stability, and hope. This work cannot be done in isolation, and it would be not possible without the strong partnerships that exist across county departments and within our community. Today, I would like to take a moment to recognize the individuals who are truly at the heart of this work, the real heroes in our county. These are the professionals and advocates who show up day after day, often and always behind the scenes, to support victims of human trafficking with compassion, patience, and unwavering dedication. Their work is demanding, complex, and emotionally taxing, yet they continue because they believe every victim deserves to be seen, heard, and supported. At this time, I would like to ask anybody in the room who works in the field of human trafficking prevention, intervention, law enforcement, prosecution, victim advocacy, or survivor to support to please stand so we may acknowledge you and express our gratitude. That would be all of you, ladies. To those standing, thank you for your commitment to justice, your compassion for survivors, and your tireless efforts to make our communities safer and more humane. Your work saves lives, restores dignity, and helps ensure that victims are not defined by what has happened to them, but by the strength they show moving forward. So thank you very much to all of you. In closing, I want to thank the board once again for your continued support of these critical efforts. Your leadership sends a clear message that our county will not tolerate exploitation, and we stand united in prosecuting and supporting those who have been harmed. Together, through awareness, collaboration, and continued commitment, we can make a meaningful difference in the lives of victims and survivors of human trafficking. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yates. Hear, hear. And does our district attorney have any final comments before we bring it back to the board?
No, that's it. I don't know if you have the proclamation or...
Yeah,
I think we do. Yeah, well, let's do the photo then. All right. Thank you for the reminder.
I want to especially acknowledge Department of Social Services, Devin Drake, and their partnership. They have a dedicated team that I don't see necessarily... their whole team here today, but they do amazing work in coordinating with other counties across the state as well.
Okay, well, thank you again, all of you, for work in this space. It's difficult work that you do, and we appreciate you. I'm going to bring it back to the board and Supervisor Moreno.
This is, as you've said, a very, a crime activity that takes place that most of us are unaware of. And I thank our district attorney because it was, several years ago when you started holding forums and really, teaching us what's going on right in our community and sometimes, under our nose. And so to be able to understand that and be able to support your efforts as much as possible, I appreciate the work that you've done because otherwise I think most people would be blissfully unaware, which is, we need more people understanding. So thank you for the work that you and your entire team do. It's important.
Supervisor Pichon.
And I just want to thank you for protecting and assisting the victims in this. It's got to be one of the toughest jobs in San Luis Obispo County. So thank you for all you do.
Supervisor Ortiz-Lake.
Yes. One of the things that I thought was so fascinating in discussing it at CSAC and all is victims not wanting help almost, or being afraid to seek help, and being caught in the mental trap of being a victim and the brutality of what they endure. And then for you to be able to try to pull them back is such huge work. So thank you so much. We really appreciate everybody's efforts. Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Supervisor Ortiz-Legge referenced our State Association of Counties, and it has been in recent years, I want to say maybe 10, 12, 13 years, thanks in large part to a now retired Los Angeles County Supervisor Don Canabi, who made a huge push to bring the awareness of this up to where we see it. I want to add my appreciation to Ms. Yates, your staff, your partners. You spoke. The words sort of don't, I think, completely capture the impact of emotionally taxing, the compassion, the empathy that those who work in this space have to bring forth every day to deal with the victims of this is an extraordinary, again, measure of human connection and kindness, and I thank all who are involved in that work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and again, we appreciate all the work that you do. Okay, with that moving forward, we will go to general public comment. These are comments related to items not on the agenda. If you have not filled out a speaker slip, there are yellow speaker slips in the back. I ask you to fill those out and bring them up to our clerk of the board. And we'll open public comment with Dr. Cindy Lewis. Please limit comment to 3 minutes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for allowing public comment. I reside in Templeton, graduated from San Luis High School, Cal Poly, and I'm a co-leader for the Indivisible North Slo County Pro-Democracy. 2 points that I have this morning. First is San Luis County is now in an emergency. If 147 ICE kidnappings in Slo and Santa Barbara counties between December 26th and 30th is not a county emergency, what is? Declare San Luis County in emergency like Portland, Oregon. How can we trust our county government when mask thugs are kidnapping people from our streets, including 2 minutes from my house, while you are asleep at the wheel? In California, kidnapping is defined in Penal Code 207 as the unlawful taking, holding, or detaining of someone by force, fear, or deception. Moving them a substantial distance without consent includes using physical force, threats, or deceit, and can range from simple kidnapping to aggravated forms, each carrying severe penalties, including significant prison time. There are many witnesses to such SLO county kidnappings. I do not trust the sheriff or his officers to uphold the law, and I'm not misinformed. Why don't you stand up for us like the Multnomah County Portland supervisors who are, quote, committed to using every tool at their disposal to support immigrant and refugee neighbors, and this declaration strengthens their responses to the cruel actions that are terrorizing families. They say, quote, our diversity is our strength, and we will never waver from our commitment to serve every person who lives here with dignity. Why is this not your statement? Emergency status ensures specific actions, including the ability to suspend purchasing rules, to accelerate getting resources to the community, and requesting emergency assistance from the state responding to increased demand. Number two, adopt an ordinance that puts teeth into civilian oversight to specifically prohibit ICE and other federal agencies from using facilities owned by San Luis County. This would go beyond SB 54 to prohibit ICE access to the jail, courthouses, and other non-public areas such as parking lots. If ICE wants to nab someone at the jail or in court, they can do it in the street. Jurisdictions such as San Mateo County, City of San Diego, and other state communities have similar measures. We need that here now. You must take seriously the public's growing alarm at the in-our-face authoritarianism of ICE. How many more people need to take to the streets before you do something about it? Which of you will take leadership? Public safety, your job, is at stake. You have the power to enact both ordinances. Do it for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So now that you've got your clapping over, I just want to highlight our rule. We do not clap. If you can do this instead, that honors everybody, whatever your viewpoint is. And we appreciate you honoring our rules of procedure here. With that, we will move to Steve Schmidt. And then after that, we'll have District Attorney Dan Dow. We have two podiums, so I will ask that the next speaker come to the next podium.
Hi, Happy New Year. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
We want you to speak at the podium.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to hear what you have to say.
Great. Happy New Year. My name's Steve Schmidt. I'm the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County History Center. I've been in the role since early October, so that's been 3 months. My apologies for not coming to a board meeting sooner. I've been pretty busy. This is basically just a quick update, and so I've given you a packet that you can kind of flip through if you'd like. First, it starts with my business card featuring the Carnegie Library, probably the most beautiful building in the city, if not the entire county. Sorry, Madonna Inn. But if you want to contact me, information's all right there. After that is copies of our annual appeal. I tried to keep it very simple. Features our mission statement. On the green paper, it's just a half letter to the citizens of the county. And I start with a quote by Mark Twain saying, "Rumors of our death have been greatly exaggerated. I want to let people know that we're here, we're alive, we're well, we're doing a lot for the county, and that we represent the entire county." So there's a map there of the entire county. And our annual appeal so far has been fairly successful. We've raised over $30,000 for the budget. It was budgeted for $20,000. Finance Committee said $18,000, and it's still going. And so there are envelopes there if you'd like to either send a check, or we have survey questions. I read them all, so I'd be interested in what you have to say, please. One person said that they donated because of the autobiography that I put out on our website, so I've included a copy of my autobiography. Also, we have a new exhibit that opened on Saturday. Thank you very much, Supervisor Ortiz-Legg, for coming to the opening. It's on Who Was Ethel Cooley, so I have a lot of information there in the packet about that exhibit. We have a lot of new exhibits coming up, but this one is really brought in the numbers. Sunday, December 28th, 130 people. Monday, the 29th, 75. This Monday, 99. So we've kind of struck a nerve and really created excitement. We have a new Cal Poly intern program, and we're starting that this week. February, I've buried the lead. The very last page is San Luis Obispo County History Day. And so this is a competition between all middle, high school, elementary, college, university students to come up with some kind of representation of San Luis Obispo County history, celebrating our birthday coming up in February, or because of the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, something about July 4th, 1776. I partnered with KVEC. Every day we have three PSAs. I have those PSA scripts for you, and then pictures that every day we have Facebook announcements. So happy 250th birthday, America. Thank you very much for your time. Please, let's be partners.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. We appreciate all the hard work you're doing for the History Center, and congratulations on your new role. Dan Dow.
Hi, good morning again. Dan Dow, District Attorney. I wanted to let you and all the public know what we're doing on September 30th, right here in your board's chambers, and that is hosting a prevention and awareness forum about fraud. There'll be three different presentations from our staff, people that are investigating and prosecuting all the latest schemes and frauds that are happening in our community. Believe it or not, we have arrested several people here from other countries, China, for instance, a couple of individuals who have gone online and defrauded people, told them they're going to come to their home in our community to take $100,000 or more, and it's going to be an investment of sorts. And we've actually been able to help interdict and stop those transactions from happening and arresting the people that are doing it. So there's all kinds of new fraud schemes affecting people everywhere, but right here in our community. So we want to let people know the three forums. There's one for the general public from 9 to 11 on January 30th. And the next one is designed for real estate professionals because of the high number of title fraud cases and other real estate transaction fraud that we've been seeing. That'll be from 12 till 2. And then finally, for small business owners, about how they can take steps to protect their small business assets from 3 to 5 p.m. Or a interested person could stay for all three if they wish. But again, January 30th, right here in the board chambers, beginning at 9 a.m. for the general public, noon for real estate professionals, and at 3 for small business owners. I hope that some of you or your staff would attend and help get the word out to your constituents. Thank you.
Thank you. Rick Reeser. And then after Rick, we'll have Roger Burton.
Good morning. My name is Rick Reeser. I live in Cambria. I'm an 805 volunteer. I'm also a retired military officer. And as an officer, I took an oath, the same oath that each of you on the Board of Supervisors took, the same oath taken by Sheriff Parkinson and the Attorney General. And that oath is to support and defend the Constitution of the United States by all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that oath is not symbolic, it's binding. And the Constitution guarantees the right to due process under the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, rights which every person on U.S. soil, every person on U.S. soil is entitled to. It guarantees equal treatment under the law. And these constitutional rights are being violated on a daily basis at the San Luis Obispo County Jail through cooperation with ICE, conduct that severely undermines public trust in the sheriff and in law enforcement in general. The sheriff's claim that turning brown people over to ICE at the jail somehow protects the community by keeping ICE out of our neighborhoods. And that is both illogical and indefensible. It's an implicit admission also that ICE itself poses a threat. A lawless agency whose presence among our community is harmful. And this practice also does nothing to keep ICE off our street. Instead, it invites ICE into our local institutions and legitimizes constitutional violations, attempting to shift harm out of view, allowing it to continue unabated. And despite this, over the past week, our community has been subjected to an unprecedented assault. A small army of unlawfully masked agents, falsely identifying themselves as police, operating unmarked vehicles with license plates removed, have seized brown people off our streets from businesses, parking lots, people on their way to work, fathers, mothers, minors, including U.S. citizens. These actions constitute an unmistakable racial profiling. They are not law enforcement, they are abductions. 147 people were violently taken from our community. Families have been broken. What you on the Board of Supervisors can do is to follow the lead of other communities throughout our country and declare ICE-free zones where ICE is prohibited from operating on neighborhood and county properties. Also, follow the spirit of the law of SB 54 and end ICE cooperation from the sheriff with ICE. You know, we're on a downward trajectory and you have the power to do something to change it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As mentioned earlier, we don't clap here. I would appreciate if you would be respectful of everybody here. We want to create a welcoming environment here at the Board of Supervisors. While you may not agree with what various public commenters say, we want to provide an opportunity for everyone to speak. So please do not clap and please be respectful. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Hi.
Roger.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Last time I came, I want to talk about communication and oversight. And last time I came, I had a very crafted 155 words per minute statement. And then you cut the time by 30%. My statement doesn't constitute a communication by itself. your appearance of listening or listening does not constitute communication. When you cut the public comment by 30% unilaterally, that constitutes communication. And I'd ask you to consider what communication it gives to your community, the community who is brave enough and capable of coming here. There's a great portion of your community who is afraid of coming here. After the raids in Chicago, the absenteeism rate in the schools was 21%. I've been working on absenteeism in Monterey Peninsula Unified School District for the last 6 months because people are afraid to come to school. I'd also like to make myself present to you a little bit. I want to support all the other speakers, and I want to introduce myself. My name is Roger Burton. I'm a strategic consultant. I work internationally. I've worked in 50 different countries around the world, all the continents, including Antarctica. I've worked with the largest corporations, government institutions in the world. I want to give you an example so you get a grounded sense of what I'm talking about. In 1998, when the Congress mandated that the IRS would shift its culture from a police culture to a culture of service, I was named in the contract as the person responsible for that cultural shift. I worked with the presidential appointee of the IRS, his team, the entire 300 top leaders of the IRS. It's a 100,000-person organization. And my work was cited by Congress as the model for oversight that all departments should adopt. So when I'm talking about oversight, I'm not talking randomly. And when I assess the oversight in this county, I would say it is gravely, gravely lacking. There is almost no oversight. There's no citizen oversight. You all are not providing functional oversight. The statements of our previous activists about what's happening in your community, I encourage you to listen to them as a whole, not as this person speaking and this person speaking and this person speaking. It's a weak signal. We're the canary in the coal mine. I really, really encourage you to become sensitive to that and alter the way that you're conducting oversight. I formally request that you instantiate a citizen oversight committee for the sheriff, and that I also want to invite you to a volunteer training. And anyone in the room, I will leave flyers. There's a QR code that gives
you
the address. I hope that we can cooperate.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to Lisa Kasich and then Linda Vanasura. I apologize if I mispronounced your name. Vanasupa.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Casale, and I'm a 20-year San Luis Obispo resident residing in District 2. I've worked for the state of California for 17-plus years in the Department of Corrections as a licensed clinical social worker, and I wasn't planning to say this, but I do want to address that how anyone in this room can stand against human trafficking, yet support Donald Trump is completely beyond me. But that's not why I came this morning. I support what the other activists have said before me, Cindy Lewis and Rick Reiser, relating to having oversight, non-cooperation agreement with immigration officials. And although we cannot undo the tremendous harm and terror that has been inflicted on our communities based on the unconstitutional and illegal practices of immigration authorities, including ICE and CBP, we do have the opportunity for us as citizens, for you as the Board of Supervisors, to not collude. And I ask that you not collude with what is happening. I've worked in the Department of Corrections. I've not spoken up when I should have in the past about certain things. And I live with that. You all have authority. You are our elected officials. Please don't collude. And don't kid yourselves into thinking that somehow your silence is acceptable. Thank you. And also, I want to mention this notion of the clapping. I understand it can be disruptive, but it is also hypocritical because clapping occurred earlier and nobody was asked not to clap. We want to clap for these children, that we want to clap for the human trafficking activists. But let's not be hypocritical.
Thank you. Thank you. So another point of order in terms of clapping. We have presentation items that occur in the morning. Those are different than public comment. When we provide an opportunity for public comment, which we value, we do have a rule against applause and clapping for the intent, the intended purpose of making a welcoming environment for everybody to speak. That is the difference, and I'd appreciate if everybody here would honor that rule and respect everybody. Thank you. Ms. Vanasupa.
Hi. I'd like to speak to you as a public service servant of 28 years in the state of California. I'm a retired professor. And as Rick had said, I understand that the oath of office for any public servants, yourself as well as the law enforcement agencies, is a solemn oath. And I actually can't tell if any of you are listening. What I do notice as I sit in the audience is people are staring at their computer sometimes, and I do know that cognitively you can't read and listen at the same time. It's actually the same part of your brain. So I do ask for you to listen to us. And I do thank you for your service. I know that nobody takes a public office without the kind of seriousness and a sincere desire to serve the public. And I know that you have done that. And at the same time, part of what I offer is observations that it seems that, to use Ms. Moreno's words, there's a sort of, you are perhaps blissfully unaware of some of the things that are happening in this community with respect to some of your community members that appear to be, you might even say, human trafficked under the descriptions that was offered before. And as you know, your commitment includes a commitment to that everyone have equal protection under the law. And I will say that myself and my colleagues have been in the jail. They have been out in the community where this is clearly not happening. We're not misinformed. We're actually witnesses to the kind of violence that is happening to certain people in our community, and those people happen to be brown. I mean, I just give you an example. You probably can't see this, but and I don't have time for the story, but I can tell you, if you went to, you were going to work in the morning, you and your husband get in the car, and you are simply in the car, and you are suddenly swamped by a bunch of masked people who are unmarked and demand that you get out of the car, you would expect that you could ask them for a warrant without the next thing happening, the windows are smashed, and you're removed from the car and taken away. This is one of two incidents where I was a personal witness and hearing from the people what happened to them. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit activated. I guess the thing that I'll say is that just ask yourself, do you want to be the board that instead of intervening, is allowing ethnic cleansing to take place in your community? There are things that you can do, and you can work with us to hear about what that is. So anyway, I know my time is up.
Thank you. We'll go to Cynthia Replogle and then Sue M.
Good morning. I'm Cynthia Replogle, speaking as co-chair of the Central Coast chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. First, a point of order. Permitting clapping during proclamations but banning it during public comment is not a neutral time, place, manner rule. It is unequal treatment of public speech and raises constitutional viewpoint discrimination concerns. Our chapter has submitted a written letter for the record regarding the upcoming January 27th Truth Act Forum. In brief, while the forum meets minimum procedural requirements, we are concerned that the current participation structure may deter the very communities the forum is intended to reach. Limiting oral comment to in-person attendance with written comment that is non-anonymous and not addressed during the meeting creates real barriers in a forum focused on law enforcement cooperation with federal immigration agents. That concern is not hypothetical. During the prior board meeting where community members spoke about holding a Truth Act forum, ICE vehicles were observed in the vicinity of this building. There has also been a sharp increase in ICE activity and detentions on the Central Coast, with some members of the very communities the forum is intended to hear from afraid to leave their homes at all. In that context, it is reasonable to expect that participation in an in-person forum or through identifiable written comments will be significantly chilled. When participation is structured in a way that predictably deters engagement, there is a real risk that the forum functions as a check-the-box exercise rather than a meaningful opportunity for community input, which is the core purpose of the Truth Act. We recognize the Act does not mandate a specific format. But the county has allowed remote participation in the past. If remote oral comment is not permitted, we urge the board to consider accepting anonymous written comments and summarizing them during the meeting so the input is not invisible. Finally, I also want to flag a separate procedural concern under AB 481. I raised this issue during prior public comment and submitted a written cure request to County Council and copied all of you recently regarding timing and notice requirements for the Sheriff's annual military equipment report and the board's November 18th ordinance renewal. I appreciate the board's attention to ensure the corrective process is initiated in a timely and transparent manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue M. Is Sue M here? And then after Sue M, we'll go to Jesse.
I am encouraged that the SLO County Board will be holding a Truth Act Forum on January 27th. I am here to encourage you, the board, to make it a true forum, a place, meeting, or medium where ideas and views on a particular issue can be exchanged. As Cynthia outlined, the time, place, and format of the meeting should be accessible, safe, and conducive to the free exchange of ideas. Having the meeting during the workday as a line item in a board meeting does not meet the specifications. Many people work during the day. At the last board meeting, ICE agents were circling the building while concerned human rights activists were speaking. While I appreciate Spanish language interpretation will be provided, you have not explained how to access that. While you did post notifications to the county website and to social media, you did not reach out specifically to the immigrant serving an immigrant community or to Spanish language outlets. Having time limits of 2 minutes on public comment or 3 minutes will, while allowing sheriff representatives to have unlimited time, will not provide for a free exchange of ideas. Allowing for people to participate remotely via Zoom will make it much more accessible, as Cynthia outlined. The sheriff providing his report a mere week before the meeting does not allow for maximum public input. I encourage you to require the sheriff to report the data as outlined in the Truth Act and to comply with all records requests pertaining to the data. In the Truth Act, it says data the sheriff maintains regarding the number and demographic characteristics of individuals to whom the agency has provided ICE access, the date ICE access was provided, and whether the ICE access was provided through a hold, transfer, or a notification request, or through other means, hanging out in the lobby, as per the Truth Act. There is still time before the meeting to rectify these issues. I encourage this board to repair the damage to public trust by making public comment a priority and not limiting or minimizing it. To further improve public trust in this board and the sheriff, I request that you place establishing a Citizens Sheriff Oversight Committee to assist the board with oversight duties per AB 1185 on the agenda for February 3rd, 2026. Again, I would like to see a Citizens Oversight Committee established per 1185, and I'd like it to be on the February 3rd, 2025 agenda, immediately following the Truth Act Forum. I do have a little time to introduce myself. I'm Sue M. I'm a retired teacher. I am an activist with Indivisible and with the Rapid Response Network of 805. Thank you.
We'll go to Jesse. Then after Jesse, we'll have Jan Meslin. If anybody else wishes to speak, make sure to fill out a speaker slip in the back and bring it to the front. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jesse Hudson. I'm an organizer with the Slo County Chapter of 5051, a nationwide grassroots resistance movement against the unconstitutional actions and authoritarian overreach of the Trump regime. Before I get to my comment, I would like to note that today is January 6th. 5 years ago, a mob of far-right MAGA extremists committed a domestic terrorist attack on the U.S. Capitol building at the behest of their treasonous pedophile cult leader and were repelled by brave members of the U.S. Capitol Police, five of whom died or took their own lives in the aftermath of this failed coup. And I would like to take a moment to remember their service and honor their sacrifice. Officer Brian Sicknick, who was assaulted with a chemical spray, he collapsed the evening of January 6th and died the next day after suffering two strokes. Officers Jeffrey Smith, Howard Liebengood, Gunther Hashida, and Kyle DeFreitag, who all took their own lives in the weeks and months following the attack. I am here this morning to push back against the assertion that we, the concerned members of this community, are conflating our local situation with national issues. I believe this is a dangerously naive point of view. We don't want to get things to get as bad here as they have elsewhere, and that's why we are calling for measures to prevent that from happening. And if the recent ICE raids here in the last week of December didn't convince you that it can get just as bad here as anywhere, I don't know what will. Will Trump have to deploy the National Guard to the streets of Slo County like he has in LA, DC, Chicago, Portland? Does he have to compel US Marines to break their oaths to the Constitution and allow themselves to be unlawfully deployed against US citizens here in your front yard before you think something needs to be done? Does a mob of violent, delusional conspiracy theorists need to storm the seat of Slo County government when their guy loses a free and fair election? If we don't take a meaningful stance now, then soon it will be too late, and these things and more will be all the more likely to happen. That is why I support everything my fellow concerned citizens are calling for today, including limiting the capability of federal agents to operate and holding the sheriff's office accountable. There are numerous examples elsewhere in the country of effective measures that can be taken here too. Santa Clara County supervisors passed an ICE-free zone ordinance that will limit federal immigration officers from carrying out raids on county-owned or controlled properties such as parking lots, vacant lots, and garages. Illinois proposed the Bivens Act, which would allow residents to bring civil action against any person who, while participating in civil immigration enforcement, knowingly engages in conduct that violates the Constitution. Flagstaff voted to end its contract with the security firm who makes Flock cameras, whose automated license plate recognition technology ICE utilizes, and had all 32 cameras removed. I beg of you, we need to push for these kinds of measures in Slo County. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move to Jan Meslin, and if there was someone else that had a public comment, make sure to fill out a speaker slip and bring it to the front. Thank you.
Hello again. All of these wonderful speakers have been moving me, and I'm hoping they're moving you. I don't see how they cannot with what's been happening in our county. And our volunteer numbers for 805 Rapid Response, where I volunteer, are keep growing. And there's a reason, because we're learning about all these things, and we want to do something, you know. If not now, when? We have to speak up and do something. I also volunteer with Freedom for Immigrants, have been for a long time. And I agree with everything my friends have said about the Truth Act Forum and what's happening in our community. I know that you agree you want a safety in our communities, and people deserve to have some quality in their life and be safe. And so we have ideas on how to make this happen. And I think you all are moving along with us. Roger invited you to a training. If you, even if you don't want to volunteer, you'll learn a lot if you come to one of our trainings. There's one on Wednesday afternoon, and we have some flyers. And I'm going to expand a little on what Jesse was talking about, some particular things that you can do as the Board of Supervisors here. The following information I got from MSN.com and the Redwood City Pulse. To the north of us, just a little ways, Santa Clara County supervisors passed in December an act to restrict federal immigration officials from using county-owned or controlled property, parking lots, vacant lots, garages, to stage enforcement operations. The new law won't prevent immigration agents from making arrests if they have a judicial warrant or court order, but it could make it harder for them to find a place to stage their operations. And as you know, federal agents have been deployed to mostly Democratic-led cities to ramp up arrests, particularly at courthouses and here in SLO County at the jail. San Mateo County could be the first county in the country to introduce a public notice system for local immigration and customs enforcement activity. Their county board of supervisors unanimously passed the introduction of an ordinance to mandate county officials alert the community of nearby ICE operations that they find out about, further limit cooperation with ICE, and regulate their use of face masks and other identity concealing tactics. Within 24 hours, they're required to notify, including deportations, workplace raids, and so on. San Francisco, San Jose, Berkeley, and Alameda County have also proposed ICE-free zone laws, and we must protect all residents. No one should live in fear. I ask you to research what has been working and then find the best way to implement here in SLO County. Thank you.
Thank you. Emma Jeffries.
Good morning. My name is Emma Jeffries. This is actually the first time I think that I've been to a Board of Supervisors meetings, though I have seen these names before on the ballot. And I'm honestly kind of disgusted today. I watched all of you sit in very concise intent to all the people, listening to all of the people who came before the public speakers. And it was okay to clap then. It was okay to clap for the public comments that happened before any of these things about ICE were brought up. But as soon as that happened, Chairman, you immediately looked like you were trying to find anything other than to listen to that, just like you are, honestly, in that moment then, that just passed. You looked like a child fidgeting in class every time that somebody was up here speaking the truth and asking you to do something about it. That's infuriating, and I don't know what more to say to you that hasn't been said.
One of our rules is to please direct your comments to the board as a whole, and I would appreciate you following that rule.
Thank you. I don't know what more there is to say to the board. I've watched many people do the same thing today. Look intently at the things that were being passed, the children's calendars, the sex trafficking, things like that. I watched everybody look intently. And then it came to public comments, and then some things got said about what's happening in our community, and I watched everybody begin to start fidgeting like you could not look someone in the eye while they were speaking to you. That is embarrassing to me to look to my public counsel and see that that is how you are reacting to people coming in trying to get your attention. I hope that you take the time to think about this at some point today. Thanks.
Thank you. With that, we are going to close public comment. I would like to ask council a couple questions for clarification based on items that were raised during public comment. The first actually pertains to our rules of procedure. It is important that we have rules of procedure to maintain order. If we don't have order to conduct the business of government, you can all imagine that things could get out of control. You might even imagine people with different viewpoints coming and disrupting meetings and how that could affect the business of government. So we do need to maintain order. To that end, I know that there was a concern raised with regard to clapping or applause during proclamations on our presentation items on the consent agenda versus applaud or clapping during public comment. And I'd like council to clarify if our rules are adhering to First sure. Amendment law.
So, thank you. John with County Council's office. So I think the chair adequately explained it previously. Again, this is a limited public forum. It's not an unlimited public forum. It's limited. Therefore, we get to impose time, place, and manner restrictions. The implementation of the no clapping rule is based on the section in the agenda. It's not based on, you know, particular viewpoints within each section. And the purpose of it is to reduce the disruptions and to provide a safe space for all viewpoints. So again, it's not based on viewpoint. It's based on, you know, which section of the agenda is coming forward and imposing rules in order to implement the board's business. And that's less disruptive and that's respectful for all viewpoints.
Thank you. Appreciate that clarification. The other issue that I think was raised was just with regard to the Truth Act forum that will be held on January 27th. And I thought we'd take the opportunity to just have you explain what the forum will consist of and encourage members of the community to attend.
Sure. I mean, the forum will consist of a presentation there will be a staff report with statistics. There will be a presentation by our sheriff's office. There will be a public comment. There will be board deliberations. The board can provide direction at that time. There will be, obviously, public comment has to be limited to a certain number of minutes, given depending on the number of speakers, so because there's only so much time. But that will be generally the format. But otherwise, we've noticed it within 30 days. We're going to talk both about 2024 and 2025. It will be January 27th in the afternoon. So
thank you. And then my final question just pertains to clarifying expectations for the community in terms of what the board can and cannot do. The Brown Act requires for us to weigh in on things for the item to have been agendized so the public has opportunity to know that it's going to be on the agenda and has that notice. So when we hear public comment, we as a board actually don't have the ability to just respond to every public comment because that wasn't an item on the agenda. We are allowed under the Brown Act to make brief comments in response to public comment. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. And then for, a number of the public comments today pertain to the tactics that ICE is using and wanting to see more transparency and accountability and oversight and all of that, I would say that the Truth Act forum would be a good opportunity to hear from your elected representatives, hear from this Board of Supervisors on that day. We will have ample opportunity for public comment and ample opportunity for our board to provide our thoughts on that, as well as hear from the Sheriff's Office. And I know that that's really what the community wants to hear. I will take the chair's prerogative to make a brief comment in response to the things mentioned today. I want you to know that there are members of this board that are sympathetic to the concern, and we've all been public, or many of us have been public about that we do have concern with how ICE is conducting its business and violating the Constitution. I wrote an op-ed on that topic, talking about my personal problem with masked men driving unmarked cars and snatching people off the streets. I studied constitutional criminal procedure when I was in law school. Having reasonable suspicion or probable cause to place an arrest are important things. Now, there have been decisions by the Supreme Court of the United States that actually allow, in the case of ICE operations, racial profiling. I personally am appalled by that. I understand that the community wants to see more accountability in terms of compliance with state law and the sheriff's interaction with ICE. I believe that the forum, the Truth Act forum, coming up on the 27th, will be a very good opportunity to look at that data. It is my hope that the community will see that the sheriff is doing what he's saying, which is complying with state law and not coordinating. I know there have been concerns raised, and I think that's an opportunity for you to submit in public comment in writing prior to the meeting and raise those concerns during public comment at the meeting so we can have that discussion. But I just want you to know that you are being heard. There are procedures for our meetings, and that's why you're not going to see us respond one way or another during public comment. We want to provide an opportunity for this to be a welcoming space for all members of the community to come and share their thoughts during public comment. And because the board is allowed brief comments at this time before we move on, I will hand it over to Supervisor Gibson for brief comments on this item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share your disgust with the actions of ICE both here and nationwide. Their actions are inhumane. To my eye, they are also illegal. I do believe it is the responsibility of the sheriff as a separately countywide elected official to document his actions and justify his actions. And I think the Truth Act forum coming in 3 weeks is the place where that can and should be done. I would point out that that meeting on the 27th of January is the next meeting of the Board of Supervisors. In the interim, I will speak personally, given my values as to the beyond disturbing nature of ICE activities. I am interested in finding out what this county, as represented by its Board of Supervisors, can do to act on those values. That's going to require some research, and that'll be part of my time spent now between now and the 27th, where we would have the opportunity to discuss that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll yield the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Ortiz-Lake.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I just want to note that thank you, Supervisor Chairman Paulding, for trying to bring some sense to what seems like, you know, arbitrary decisions on this. You know, we were in this building on the in 2020. So first, I want to acknowledge Jesse's comments in regards to January 6, 2020, and really appreciate him recognizing those in law enforcement that lost their life and what went down. That is pretty significant. That is extremely significant in this country's history. And I think that, you know, it's very challenging to be spoken to in the terms that you talk to us at, in regards to that we don't care or that we're not doing anything in regards to our authority and our capabilities. I think, you know, all of us here really are very concerned and understand why you're passionate and why you have so much anger at this time. It's quite understandable. But we'd like to have it be spoken to in a way that we're not the enemy. We're not part of ICE. We're not part of the federal government. And that, you know, we are going to continue to work hard to try to do exactly what we can do. And we thank you for your volunteerism on this and working with those who are traumatized, terrorized, and victimized in regards to these actions that are being taken. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Chair Ortiz-Lake. Okay, with that, we are going to move public comment and move on to the next item on the agenda, item 16. This is board member comments and reports. And I'm looking to see if any board member has a comment or report. Okay, seeing no lights on, we will close that item and move on to item 17. This is our closed session, and I'll hand it over to County Council to describe that.
Sure. So the board will be meeting in closed session on items 4, 16, and 17, and make sure you take public comment.
Thank you, sir.
And I anticipate it will take about 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. Okay, very good. Are there any members of the public who would wish to speak on our closed session agenda? Okay. Seeing no members come forward, we will now adjourn. What's the word? It's not adjourn. We will break to closed session. Thank you. Still recess. There it is, to closed session. Thank you so much for your latitude.